Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Thank you for listening. Please note, we are in Holy Week now, and Easter Sunday is on the horizon. So as we conclude our Lenten journey, please use this Holy Week to prepare your heart and your mind by listening to Close to Jesus to the Last at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Central. We'll pause with Father Rocky at those times to delve into the events of Jesus' last days before his passion, and ultimately, all of this leads to his resurrection on Easter. You'll have two opportunities to pray the Stations of the Cross right here on Relevant Radio on Good Friday at noon Central with Bishop Robert McClory live from the Shrine of Christ's Passion in St. John, Indiana, and at 3 p.m. Central with Father Rocky from the Chapel of the Nativity in Green Bay. We'll broadcast the Easter Vigil Mass on Saturday from the Vatican with Pope Francis. That'll be live at 12:30 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio. For a complete guide to all of our special Holy Week programming, just look for the banner at relevantradio.com or on your Relevant Radio app. You are cordially invited. 888-914-9149. Back to the phones. Let's go to Nancy now in Pittsburgh. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. And I love your show.
Thank you.
My question is, my parents are divorced, and they've been divorced for over 50 years. And my question is about communion. My mom was told by a priest that she could take communion regardless of annulment. So she does, and she struggles with it. Even though a priest told her it was okay, she still struggles that she wants it, but she feels like she's sinning. And then my father has never taken communion since I can remember. And so I wanted to understand what your thoughts were on that.
All right. First, I'm deeply sorry to hear that your parents got divorced. I'm sure that had an impact on you. And not that you're calling to talk about that, but you have my condolences. So with regard to your mother, let's talk about, first of all, what are her circumstances? So since the divorce, did your mother seek to remarry?
She did.
Okay. So that's the sticking point. So I'm assuming, and maybe I'm wrong to assume, but did she request the church's annulment process to determine whether or not the first marriage was valid? Or did she just get remarried without going through that process?
The latter. She never went through the annulment process.
Okay. So, objectively speaking here, as Jesus said, if a man divorces his wife and marries another, he commits adultery. And the same, of course, is true for wives who remarry after a divorce. And the reason is that the church presumes, unless and until it can be demonstrated conclusively otherwise, the church presumes that that first marriage is valid. And if the first marriage is valid, then even though there's a decree of divorce, it doesn't mean that either or both parties are free to remarry. So if your mother, since she remarried, she's objectively living in the state of adultery, which is why she should not receive Holy Communion. I don't know why some priests, hopefully the number is, you know, hopefully the percentage of them who do this is small. I don't know. But they're not doing anyone any favors by giving terrible advice like this, like, yeah, that's fine, go to confession or go to communion, because the church says not to. If you have serious sin on your soul, as St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, don't go to communion, because he says, if you do so, you're guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. That's a euphemism for murder. It's serious. So, first of all, that's pastoral malpractice, and the priest, you know, if you're out there listening, Father, stop telling people to receive communion if they know they're in the state of mortal sin, because you know why? It's going to redound to your detriment, and you're going to have to answer to the Lord for all those people that you told to receive Holy Communion in the state of mortal sin. That's coming back to haunt you, and I don't want that for you. I want to see you in heaven. So stop doing that. Stop telling people that. It's wrong. And if, by the way, if you're listening to this and someone told you that, put that out of your mind. Ignore that, because that's false. It's bad advice. The church says, Jesus says, St. Paul says, if you divorce your wife and marry another, or if you divorce your husband and marry another, you commit adultery. Now, the point here, and Nancy, to your question, the point here is that you can resolve this if you want to, and your mom could if she wants to, and I don't know any other circumstances, but if she and her current husband, under the law, were to live as brother and sister and not do the one thing that married people do that would cause her to be living objectively in adultery, then she could go to confession and she could be truly sorry for all of her sins, make a clean breast of it, receive absolution, and then she can receive Holy Communion. Then she can receive Holy Communion, absolutely. But until then, until she's contrite and she's willing to confess the sin and stop the specific thing that's problematic, she should not receive Holy Communion. What are your thoughts?
I have one other question, and I apologize for leaving this part out. She has since widowed. So if she does go to confession now.
Even easier. Yeah, okay. So her second husband has died. She's
right.
Okay, so all she needs to do is go to confession and make a good, sincere confession. She'd need to, you know, bring all this up. She'd need to be specific about what happened. Now, she doesn't have to go into, as I say, no gory details. The priest doesn't want to hear the gory details. But she could say, along with any whatever other mortal sin she might have, if she has any others, she could say, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 20 years since my last confession. I got divorced from my husband. I didn't receive an annulment. I got remarried civilly. And I lived with my husband as husband and wife for the next 20 years with all that that involves. And I mean, over that period of time, this particular activity may have happened X number of times." She doesn't have to be precise, but she could extrapolate and just say, this particular activity, as near as I can remember, happened about X number of times. And then if there are any other serious sins, whatever those may be, she just confesses all of it. Don't leave anything out. Be truly sorry. Doesn't mean that she won't look back with love for this man. I mean, we're human. We have these emotions, and that's normal. But she would have to be genuinely sorry that she did it in the first place. You know, that she offended God.
Okay.
And if she does that, she has a clean bill of health.
Okay.
She can go to communion, but
that.
Not
Thank
before.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Nancy. Thank you. It's a sad situation. And it would, I'm tempted to rant, and I'm going to just, I just want to rant for just a teensy bit here. It's a sad situation that's made all the sadder. It's made all the more tragic when someone gives bad advice just to be liked or just to come across as pastoral, to say to somebody, "Yeah, just go ahead and go to communion. It's fine. Everything will be fine." No, that's not true. So if someone's telling you that or has told you that, please listen to Jesus. Listen to St. Paul, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, the second half of the chapters where he deals with not going to Holy Communion when you're not supposed to, and he explains it. Read that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to John now in Rochelle Park, New Jersey. Hello, John.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Patrick, these are my... Good, good. Patrick, these are my phone call, as I'm a long-time parishioner of my parish, about 20 years. I've become good friends with the pastor and the associate pastor. But one thing that drives me crazy is that when I go to the 9:30 Mass on Sundays, they skip the second reading. And apparently they do that. I haven't really got a clear answer, probably because it's the children's Mass. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I think there's a lot of value from the second reading. And I don't really think it's asking that much for the children to sit through the second reading. And third, quite frankly, I'm the one who's putting the money in the collection basket. So I want to get my full I want to get the full Mass. And the other thing that kind of drove me crazy in particular this Sunday is that during the reading of the Passion, they let us sit. And I mean, I grew up and we stood during the reading of the Passion. I don't think it's that much to ask people to stand for, 10 minutes. People stand in line longer than that for tickets and subway, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And, you know, if Christ is going to die on the cross for our sins, I don't think it's asking that much for us to stand. And so my issue is that, you know, again, I've been going to this parish for a long time, but it really bothers me, and I'm kind of torn. I'm thinking, well, maybe I need to go somewhere else. So,
well, it sounds like, John, I'm only guessing, it sounds as though this is sort of like, what's the bare minimum we have to do? And we'll just do the bare minimum. It sounds like maybe there's a mindset there of let's squeak by with as little as we have to do. Am I reading that right, or is this just an isolated situation?
You know, I think it's really just a matter of someone wants to cater to the children.
Well, was it a children's mass, or was it just a regular mass?
It's 9:30. Well, I guess it's the 9:30 Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Is it officially the children's mass? I'm not quite sure because, you know, in the summertime, they will do the second reading. It really seems to be happen when CCD is going to follow the mass. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I don't know, obviously, what's going through the mind of the priest, and it's not for me to know. But objectively speaking, we can say this, that the church prescribes certain rubrics for Mass. Now, it's a little bit different on weekdays than it is on Sunday, but the general instruction of the Roman Missal stipulates that at Mass, the liturgy of the word is comprised of the first reading, the psalm, the second reading, and the gospel. That's the rubric. That's the rule, and that's what's supposed to be read. And the priest really doesn't have the option. I mean, if a canon lawyer wants to correct me on this, please feel free, but I don't think I'm incorrect on this. I don't believe the priest has the option to omit the second reading on a Sunday Mass. He just doesn't have that option. So that's a problem if he's routinely or chronically omitting the second reading. He shouldn't do that. As for the issue of sitting during the reading of the Passion, as we heard on Sunday, you know, there is a bit of a gray area. The custom is to stand, and it is a long reading, but it's intended to be long because we're following the very important part of the life of Jesus and a little bit of suffering for those who can stand. I mean, some people can't. They have a bad back or their bad knees or whatever, and the church understands. Feel free to sit if you need to. But most people don't need to sit. They can tough it out and stand for the 10 minutes that it takes to read that section of the gospel. So it sounds like there's a bit of a malaise there if the priest's view of things is, let's just get by with the bare minimum. That's not a good thing, it doesn't seem to me. So my suggestion, John, would be if you have the ability to speak to him about it and just ask him politely. I've noticed that there seem to be some things omitted, like the second reading from Mass, and I'm not sure why that happens. Could you explain that to me, Father? And who knows? Who knows what he'll say? And you can decide on what to say after that. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt, but that's a pretty clear-cut omission that shouldn't be taking place. But long story short, John, given the aggravation that you're experiencing here, if this is something that's not changing and not going to change, and if it were me, I would just simply go to a parish where they do things properly. And that way your aggravation level comes down and you're not leaving Mass distracted and everything is good.
Fair enough. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Okay, John, I appreciate it. Far be it from me to sit in judgment of priests. That's not my position. It's not what God has called me to do. Their bishops are certainly in that position. I'm not. But when the lay faithful are battered and bruised because the parish priest is not doing something he should be doing, or he's doing something he shouldn't be doing, or maybe a combination of both, well, I mean, the lay faithful have a right, and even at times, according to Canon 212, an obligation to speak up. Canon 212, look it up sometime. If you're online, look up Canon 212 in the church's canon law. And paraphrasing here, it says that the lay faithful, that's you and me, those who are not ordained priests, that would include deacons and bishops as well, obviously, but all of us, the lay faithful, we make up the vast majority of the church percentage-wise. And Canon 212 says that the lay faithful have a right to speak up and manifest their concerns about problems that are going on in the church. And it has a few niceties about how to go about doing it, but it says there in the same canon that there are times when lay people have an obligation to speak up. We have the right, but we also have the obligation at times to speak up. So I don't want to be, you know, coming across, and I hope I don't, like, you know, it's open season on priests, or let's criticize priests, or let's criticize bishops, because that's not at all what I'm about, and certainly not at all what I would like to do. But on the other hand, if it's a problem like this, it needs to be addressed, and that's the kind of thing that a bishop should take into account. 888-914-9149. Let's see if we can get to Nicole in Las Colinas, Texas. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning. I'm in a prayer group, and we read the prayers out of the Book of Truth. And it's, I think, the private messages, supposedly from Jesus. And her name is Maria of Divine Mercy. And somebody told me that it was condemned. Do you know if it's been officially condemned by the church?
I think it has, but I would have to go back and double check it. If you look up Maria Divine Mercy at Catholic Answers, Catholic.com, I believe they have in fact, I just looked, and they do indeed have an article about this. And my recollection is that it was condemned, but
The prayers are beautiful, so if it is condemned, then I can't go to the prayer group, right?
Well, I wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't go if they were using something that was aberrant, certainly not if it was condemned. But do your due diligence first. So go to Catholic.com and then type in Maria Divine Mercy, and that will pull up their article. You can read it. I'm seeing here there's
Catholic
another
Answers,
article.
And then...
Go ahead.
Go to Catholic Answers and then look that up.
Catholic.com is their website. And that's right. That's the Catholic Answers website. There's also an article about this in the National Catholic Register, and that one is called 9 Things You Need to Know About Maria Divine Mercy. And that is an extended kind of analysis of Maria Divine Mercy and the popularity of this devotion, etc. So I would need to go back and read those to be fully up to speed on this, but here's the conclusion of that second one, and I'll have to take a break here in a second. The author of the article says, there are abundant reasons not to trust Maria Divine Mercy's claims. One of them is that she operates anonymously. This does not fit the pattern of authentic visionaries who have been willing to undergo criticism and even persecution for the sake of their visions. Maria Divine Mercy, by contrast, apparently lives a normal life that she keeps partitioned off from her secret life, in which she uses the internet to spread her messages and sell her books. Yet her secret life is so important that God himself has told her that she is, quote, the seventh messenger, the seventh angel sent to reveal to the world the contents of the seals in the book of Revelation, end quote, and that she is an end-time prophet. Really? After all the prophets and visionaries of history who operated with people knowing their identities with them and their families facing the consequences of delivering God's message, God wants the so-called end-time prophet to operate safely and anonymously from the comfort of her living room, using an internet connection to maintain her privacy? Also, what is this seventh messenger and seventh angel business? Who were the previous six? And humans aren't the same kind of creatures as angels. There are also abundant reasons not to trust her prophecies. Now, it goes on from there, and it gives some really specific examples of this. So this is refreshing my memory from what I think I heard way back when. I think I'm correct on this. I would say, based upon what I'm seeing here, have nothing to do with it. And to make it even easier for everybody, we're going to post a link to this for you, Nicole, on the show page, which is relevantradio.com/Patrick. It'll be up there in a minute or two. So if you want to read this article that's got a voluminous critique of the Maria Divine Mercy phenomenon, you'll find it there in a matter of moments. Thanks for the call. Excuse me, I can't even talk. Thanks for the call, Nicole. Time for some more coffee. Right here on the Patrick Madrid Show, I'm coming back, and you are part of the program when you give me a call at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'm also going to tell you which media organizations are more trusted by Democrats and which ones are more trusted by Republicans. You may not be surprised when I tell you right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Salt. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Solidarity Health Share. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. You may remember, if you're old enough to remember, 1981, some dude, John Hinckley Jr., tried to kill President Ronald Reagan. Nearly did it, too. President Reagan was coming out of a hotel, out of the side entrance to get in the limousine. And as he's walking to the car, and the press is there, and a bunch of people are there, and John Hinckley, you know, gets down on one knee in a shooter's crouch, and he fires a .22 pistol several times. He hit Ronald Reagan at least once, if not twice. I know one bullet went into his chest, lodged near his heart, and President Reagan almost died on the operating table. Two other people were seriously wounded. But in any case, that John Hinckley Jr. went to prison, we hoped forever. He got out of prison. I don't know why they let him out of prison. It doesn't seem like it was a smart idea. Mentally ill, I guess, but maybe not. I don't know, because, you know, he spent a lot of time in prison. Well, he's out now, and he's writing music, and he tweeted the other day, "Big news, I'll be performing on July the 8th at the Market Hotel in Brooklyn." And he said that a special guest would make an appearance. Get your tickets while you can. I'm guessing he probably is not going to sell out. And partly because he included a song that he wrote and he'll be performing. You tell me what you think. Cyrus, you've got some audio of this, I think, right?
You're in my dreams most every night. You're still looking fine.
Can I stop it now, please?
Yeah, please. Please. Yeah. I don't even know what to say about that. He's a failed assassin.
And a failed musician. Oh.
Ooh.
I hope he doesn't shoot me for that.
Ooh.
How do you shoot a president and not be in prison the rest of your life?
See, that's my logic. You shoot a president, you go to prison forever.
That's it. Bye.
There are no do-overs.
Bye-bye.
So this guy's now a free man, and he's I don't like it. He's got a CD of his music. I mean, if you want to punish somebody, maybe force them to listen to this music. You just put it on auto loop. And by the way, I don't think that actress Jodie Foster is impressed. I don't think she, and you're saying, what? What does this have to do with Jodie? Well, here's what it has to do with. When he was caught immediately, and he was asked, why did you shoot the president? He said, I wanted to impress Jodie Foster, because Jodie Foster, in this warped world of his, she plays, she was a girl of 12 or 13 years old in the movie Taxi Driver. Don't go see it. Not a good movie. And I guess he thought that if he just did something big enough that it would impress her, and then maybe she might go on a date with him or something like that.
So he's a pedophile who shot a president.
I don't know about pedophile. No, I don't know about that.
I mean,
that.
If you're into 12-year-olds, I don't know any other way to say it.
Hey, whoa, easy, big fella.
I definitely don't want to make John, whatever his name is, Hinckley mad at me, but...
No, you don't want that on your karmic record.
I really don't.
No. I don't know. I mean, who knows? But he's out. He's out on the streets. And now he's murdering music.
I'm so glad you're mine.
See, this is not fair. Because our audience didn't tune in to be tortured.
Could you imagine if Shanghai was playing so they force all the people?
Oh, here's what you do. If you're the Communist Chinese Party, you send drones flying around playing that. And people will stay indoors. They'll lock their windows just to stay indoors to get away from that. Talk about crowd control. okay. I would not recommend buying tickets for this concert. Also,
thanks for that recommendation.
Yeah, you were just to purchase your tickets.
I had my finger on the trigger.
I mean, maybe if they held it at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C., that might be, you know, an historical angle.
You win. That was good.
Oh, boy. All right. So moving on, and we have some more audio that we're going to share with you in a little bit. Moving on, let's go to Katie in Orlando. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi.
What would you like to talk about?
I have a question. What is your opinion on Harry Potter?
Well, I think that Harry Potter is a fascinating tale that, of course, as you probably know, has been very popular all around the world for as long as they've been around, which is, gosh, what, 20-some-odd years maybe. People really like it. They like the books. They like the movies. But my concern is, and I've said this all along, probably, you know, from before you were born, I've said that I have a real concern with people kind of cozying up to the idea of being a witch or a wizard and casting spells. Because even though in itself, you know, if you say that this is harmless fantasy literature, some people compare it to C.S. Lewis in his Chronicles of Narnia. I think there's some really important differences. But it is mesmerizing for some people, and it can draw them into the world of the occult, where it's really seriously dangerous because the devil, as the Bible says, Katie, is like a roaring lion prowling around looking for someone to devour. And if you start dabbling in what you think is witchcraft, even if it's just an innocent idea in your own mind and casting spells and things, I think that is dangerous because it can lead people toward that world, and I would rather recommend people not go in that direction. So this has been a raging controversy for all the years that Harry Potter has been around, and there are some people who are adamantly convinced that there's nothing wrong with Harry Potter. They think it's good. The kids should read it. And I can understand from the standpoint of literary interest, why in a book that's well written, has an interesting storyline, vivid characters, lots of fun, as these books certainly are, I could see why parents would get excited if their kids are picking up these 500-page books and reading them, and maybe that's sparking the kids to read more, which is a good thing. I'm an author, by the way, so I love it when people read books. But my concern, nonetheless, is that this can be a kind of pretty poison where without realizing it, people can be drawn into or at least toward the world of the occult. And that's my concern. And one final thing, Katie, are you familiar with the term exorcist? Do you know what that means, a priest who performs exorcisms?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So that's my mom heard that Harry Potter, like, kids shouldn't read it. That's why I'm asking.
Well, this is a good thing that you're asking because, and this may be the same exorcist priest that your mom is thinking of, but Father Gabriel Amorth, who was an exorcist in the city of Rome, in the Diocese of Rome, where the Pope is, for many years, he specifically said, based upon his experience in casting out demons and knowing what the demons are up to, he specifically warned about the Harry Potter books by name. He said that those are dangerous. Now, he said that long after I had already formed my own opinion on this, but I felt validated that my own opinion on this seemed to track with what he said, but he was more adamant about it. And so I took that to heart because I think he would know, given his experience working with helping people get free from demonic influence, that if he says that, that carries a lot of weight. So are you into the Harry Potter books?
Oh, no. I was just asking because, most of the kids at my school used to read it, and we even have Catholic friends, very devout, who read it, and I was just like, is it good? Like, is it okay to read? Or is it, like, so evil that I shouldn't even lay hands on it?
Well, this is the thing. I don't think it's completely evil. In fact, it's mostly not at all evil. I read the first volume when it first came out because I wanted to know what I was talking about. I didn't read any of the subsequent volumes, but I did read the first one, and I saw two of the movies. I don't know how many there are now, but I saw the first two because I felt like I needed to have a really clear idea. So I'll be the first one to agree. They're interesting. They're well written. The characters are great. The storyline is interesting. But where I began to have some qualms was the fact that they're teaching the kids to cast spells. And, you know, naturally, young people, they want to be like Harry Potter. And if you, although I don't know if it's still this way now, probably isn't anymore, but maybe 15 years ago, before you were born, if you went into a bookstore like Barnes & Noble's or one of the other big bookstores, there would be whole huge sections, not only of the Harry Potter stuff, but also books on witchcraft and how to cast spells and how to be a witch. And I saw them and I browsed through them. And I know that for a while, this was a really big phenomenon. And there were people who were going from the Harry Potter books into some of these other things. And that's where it really becomes dangerous. So, you know, you don't want to be casting spells, because casting spells is to conjure spirits. And the church specifically forbids that. The idea of trying to encounter these spirits, who are going to be, of course, demons, and trying to get them to do your bidding and to make things happen because you do certain incantations, those are all things the church says stay far away from. So my wife and I, we didn't let our kids read the Harry Potter books. And, you know, we told them, when you grow up, you do what you want, and you can see the movies or read the books if you want. But while you're here under the age of 18, we're not going to have them. And so that's the way we handled it. So ultimately, of course, it'd be up to your parents, for you.
That's another reason. I was wondering if some of your kids wanted to read it, and like if you had an opinion about them that was pointing one way or the other.
Well, my opinion pointed in the negative direction. So my concerns were such that I didn't want my kids reading them. And I don't think, once they all grew up, I don't even think any of them ever read the books. They might have seen the movies, maybe, I don't know. But as adults, you're in a better position to kind of think things through more clearly. I did, you know what I'll do, Katie? I need to find it. But I did an interview with an author by the name of Michael O'Brien. He's a Canadian author, and he's a friend of mine. But we did a two-hour interview in which we discussed this phenomenon of Harry Potter. We did this about 20 years ago. And I'll find the audio of that in the next day or two, hopefully, and then I will post it on, say, on my Twitter feed, for example. That way, people who want to hear this would be able to click it and listen to it. But I don't have it handy right now, but I'll see if I can't find it and put it up there. And then maybe your mom can locate it, and then that'll give you 2 hours worth of reasons why I have concerns about it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Patrick, can I further that question?
Sure, absolutely.
I've thought about this. Why is Harry Potter bad, but Lord of the Rings is okay, or C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia is okay, but Harry
Potter
bad?
That's a good question. Well, it's a good question. I don't know that I have an answer for it because, well, as you know, Cyrus, this is the odd blind spot that I have, and that is that I never got into Lord of the Rings. I tried it a couple times, and I just couldn't follow it, and I got bored with it. So I don't really know the whole Lord of the Rings lore. You know, I know about it, and I've fallen asleep through the movie a time or two. My kids think I'm crazy because everybody loves it. So I don't know with regard to Lord of the Rings, but just to kind of extrapolate from what I think I know about it, I think the difference is that the Lord of the Rings is an allegory of Christ. And you have humans and angels. I think the elves are angels, if I'm not mistaken. And you've got the big eye. What's the big eye? Is that Sauron? That's the devil. And the ring is human power that can be corrupted or it can be used wisely. And so there's so many Christian themes there that to me it seems allegorical and therefore different, because it's not drawing people into the world of the occult, but it's teaching them at a deep level the truth of the gospel by using these analogies, these analogous characters. That's my perception of it anyway. But to contrast that with Harry Potter, there is no Christ motif. Some people try to make the claim that Harry Potter is the Christ figure. I don't buy that for a moment. So there's no deeper meaning there other than, hey, kids, you might be a wizard and all your muggle family, you know, all those muggles, they don't know. you know, and it kind of taps into a Gnostic desire for arcane secret knowledge that only the initiated few have. That was a heresy in the early church, by the way. So the overtones of Gnosticism, and, you know, maybe you should go in your room and try to cast spells and see what happens, and maybe something will happen because maybe you really are. Those are things that are not found in the Chronicles of Narnia at all, nor are they found in the Lord of the Rings that I know of anyway. You could tell me if I'm wrong on that. But it's the emphasis in Narnia on the Christ figure of Aslan. And that, by the way, is the Turkish word for lion, and that he has the form of a lion. So I see the Chronicles of Narnia and the Lord of the Rings as drawing people toward Jesus and toward these august truths of the faith, and I don't see that in the Harry Potter books. I see something going in the opposite direction, even though it's very interesting. So school me, Cyrus. What do you think?
It's fair enough. I can't argue your point, but the Harry Potter books to me were stories about friendships, how to be a good friend, and also how we all have dark tendencies that we must learn to overcome and be better people. Like Harry is mm-hmm. constantly worried about his connection to this evil Voldemort, right? And right. and they have this crazy connection that he doesn't understand, and he worries throughout these books, am I a bad person? Mm. And I thought they were great. I really enjoyed the books. I read them as a young adult, not as a child, but okay. I wasn't looking at it as like, oh, how do I cast spells? I was looking at it as a story about friends.
Fair enough. You know, and I freely admit that there are people who will what's the right word? They'll interact with this, with the Harry Potter phenomenon in different ways. And I realize that maybe for the vast majority of people, these are just interesting stories, and it's nothing more than that for them. And that's great. I'm happy about that. But what about the subset of people for whom this is a draw? It is a portal for them, and it does draw them, as Barnes & Noble knew from their marketing experience, that if you stick the Harry Potter books in the same section with books on witchcraft and spells, people will buy that stuff. And so that's my concern. It's not as though everybody who reads a Harry Potter book is going to have problems, but some people will. And I wouldn't want that to happen to people like you, Katie.
Yes.
I'm really glad you called. Please tell your mom thank you for letting you call me.
Yes. I was just going to say, I remember this past October, we met at your talk in Orlando.
Is that so? Oh.
Yes.
Well, it was nice to meet you. I don't remember our meeting, yes. But then again, I meet a lot of people, but I'm glad you called in.
Mm-hmm.
Was the talk boring?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Very interesting.
I was worried. I'm glad you found it interesting, Katie. Maybe I'll make my way down to Orlando again one of these days. Thanks for calling, Katie. God bless you. I'll be right back. Abracadabra. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
I see what you're doing, Cyrus. I get it. I like it. Good.
Yeah, it's all magic, you know?
It's good. 888-914-9149. If you're just tuning in now, you didn't hear a call I took from an 11-year-old girl just before the break about the Harry Potter books. And if you're saying, oh, yeah, I wish I had heard that. Well, if you want to hear it, you can hear all of this program. Any part that you miss, you can hear it over again. Just go to the Relevant Radio app or go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and we get the shows loaded up almost, well, I'd say within an hour after each show. You'll be able to hear all that. And maybe you've got friends. Maybe you have a family back in the old country, and you'd like them to know about this program. Just go there and go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Grab the link and just text it to your friends and family in the old country. So if you're from the Philippines or you're from India or you're from wherever, it doesn't matter where you are, There are a lot of people back home who really would enjoy listening to this program, but they can't get it on a radio station because we don't have radio stations in India and the Philippines. Not yet.
Where am I supposed to get it?
I'm glad you asked. The Relevant Radio app. Easy peasy. Just go to the App Store if you have an iPhone, or go to Google Play if you have an Android, and just type in Relevant Radio. You'll see it right there. It's got a blue kind of background with an image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Download that, and that's all they have to do. And then your family and friends, wherever you happen to be in the world, they can listen to this program in real time if they want, or they can listen to the archives of the program. But this is something we really want people back home to know about, and that's where you come in. So do me a favor and just send some links out that way. Also, I want to get to, I've always got to have a little bit of the libs of TikTok in my diet, only because they're curating for you just an endless heaping helping of the insanity that's going on in TikTok world. And so hardly a week goes by that we don't at least have a couple examples of that. I've got one for you right now. This is a first grade teacher. Did I say first grade? First grade teacher. In an identity share Zoom call with kindergarten through second grade kids, explaining what trans means and being trans. And the reason I want you to hear this, it's not terribly long, but the reason I want you to hear this, especially you parents, I want you to hear this for this reason. Because the ideology that has taken hold, it has metastasized across the school system all across the country. It has metastasized into the government. It's in all facets of social media. It's in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marine Corps. You know, these generals and admirals at the Joint Chiefs of Staff level, they are forcing this kind of stuff on the men and women in uniform. Please understand, this is not isolated just to schools, but it's rampant in schools, even though they'll tell you it's not. It is. So if you want to see what's really happening, follow this Libs of TikTok. You can follow them. I guess they have a website. But here's the point. This is the kind of indoctrination that takes place in the classrooms or via Zoom calls in these young grades on a daily basis all around the country. So what I want you to do is listen to what he's saying, she. Listen to what's being said here and recognize that this is an ideological shift away from reality, and it's being presented in a very sort of calm, very sort of matter-of-fact way. And your kindergartner, your first grader, your second grader, if they're in the public schools, this is what they are being told in a widespread way. It may not be in your child's classroom, but it may be there soon enough. But it's certainly all across the board throughout the school systems in the United States. So listen to this. Cyrus, do we have the name of this person, or is it just from the Libs of TikTok?
Just Libs of TikTok.
Okay. So listen, this is an explanation of the gender ideology that you need to understand.
And something cool about me, Miss Hammond?
Can I pause? Right. I got to pause. Okay. You need to see this, okay? So it's a woman who has, let's say, quote-unquote, transitioned to being a man. So there's some little sparse, wispy little bit of facial hair. A man's haircut, men's clothes. And obviously...
this looks like a dude.
Well, look closely and...
Yeah, just a quick.
But I know what you mean. At first glance, you might glance and say, oh, okay. And then I'm assuming hormones to make the voice deeper. So all these stereotypes of what men look like, you know, that's what you're seeing here, this woman. But you notice there's no Adam's apple. That's interesting. But in any case, the lowered voice, the wispy little bits of facial hair, the male clothing, the male haircut. And so if you're just listening to it, you might think that this is a young man, and that's the goal that she's going for. But here's the way she's explaining transgender to your children.
All right. So something that's really cool and unique about who I am is that I am transgender. So we touched a little bit about that at the beginning of this week in the book that Ms. Hammond read. But I'm going to give you my explanation about what it means to be transgender as well.
Okay, pause again. Pause again. Just for the sake of letting you know, he's speaking to the students. OK, Okay, this is him.
6-year-olds, 7-year-olds,
6-year-olds. Yeah. So what specifically? It's kindergarten through second grade. So it's a group of students, kindergarten, first grade, and second grade, and she is it? In, I guess in essence, instructing them on this Zoom call. I promise I'll be quiet. From
and this
here
is
on.
After they've read a book about. Some
they read the book.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So when babies are born, the doctor looks at them and they make a guess about whether the baby is a boy or a girl based on what they look like. And most of the time, that guess is 100% correct. There are no issues whatsoever. But sometimes the doctor is wrong. The doctor makes an incorrect guess. When the doctor makes a correct guess, that's...
I got to pause it. Patrick, how does a doctor guess? Okay, can you explain this to me?
Well, in the world of reality, I've seen 11 babies born, okay? Saw my wife push out 11 human beings. And I was there, and I saw it happen. As soon as the baby comes out, because they come head first, the baby's, you know, blah, 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 then the baby's out, and the doctor is holding the baby, and you can tell. So if the baby has a penis, the baby is a boy. If the baby has a vagina, the baby is a girl. That's your first indication. Now, obviously, if that were ambiguous, and it's very rare, but sometimes it does happen, that it is ambiguous. And so there are tests that can be done readily to determine chromosomes, XX versus XY, anatomical features, etc. So it's not as though you simply can't know, but you're not guessing is the point. You're not guessing. You're not assigning. You are recognizing. You are identifying based upon all the identifiable signs. So let's go back to what she's saying. Maybe you can run it back just a little bit because I don't want to interrupt her train of thought. This is really important for people to understand how this is being explained to the little guys.
But sometimes the doctor is wrong. The doctor makes an incorrect guess. When the doctor makes a correct guess, that's when a person is called cisgender. When a doctor's guess is wrong, that's when they are transgender. So I'm a man, but when I was a baby, the doctors told my parents I was a girl. And so my parents gave me a name that girls typically have and bought me clothes that girls typically wear. And until I was 18 years old, everyone thought I was a girl. And this was super, super uncomfortable for me because I knew that wasn't right. The way I like to describe it is like wearing a super itchy sweater. The longer you wear it, the itchier it gets. And the only way to make the itching stop is to have everyone see and know the person that you really are. So when I was 18, I told my family and my friends that I'm really a boy. And it was like this huge weight had been lifted off of my shoulders and I had the freedom to be who I truly am. And even though this experience is super challenging sometimes, it made me the person I am and I'm super proud to be transgender.
All right. I think I don't really even need to comment. Excuse me. It is what it is. And it's just part of the standard flow. That is, if you want to see it, just go to Libs of TikTok. You'll see it there. Now, I don't think we have a second audio on that topic, do we, Cyrus? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's it for today.
Okay. So one other thing real quick. Just be aware that in Newspeak now, the term cisgender is used. Please understand the way in which this is used. It's intended to mean if you're quote-unquote cisgender, that means that you are anatomically, chromosomally, physiologically male, and you identify as male. Well, you are. If you are anatomically, chromosomally, physiologically male, and you identify as male, then you're cisgender, meaning you are what you identify with. If you are the same in female, then you are that. So and I'm out of time. Well, what can I tell you? But just this, don't buy into that terminology, the cis this and cis that. That is a fake category. It doesn't exist.
We clear.
I'll be right back with hour 3. We're clear.
Are we clear?
We are clear. And we'll come right back. Wow.